part four of the Buzz Bubble interview with George Lois. On the Buzz Bubble.
No, anybody who understands the 60s.
Well, that's why I'm here to talk to
anybody
the man who really lived it.
The heroics of the 60s. It was a heroic age. Yeah. When Mad Men, I first heard about Mad Men, people were hearing about it, and I was getting calls. Hey, George, they're doing a show about you. What do you mean? He said, well, it's about the advertising ages in the 60s. I was the epitome.
Yeah.
I started my ad agency January the 2nd, 1960.
Okay.
You know, in the Sigma building, you know, classy as hell. And it was about the premiere, and I get a phone call from one of the producers. Well, if you want to know what the 60s was, when anybody who hears about the 60s in advertising, if they know anything, they immediately think of the creative revolution. Immediately.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And they think of me, and they think of the agencies that follow me, Mary Wells, and they think of that's it. Heroic. I mean, we changed what advertising was all about, et cetera. So I say, if you really want to know what it was about, I did a book. I've done 9 books, but I did a book. My first book was a book called George Be Careful. It was kind of like a autobiography. I remember when I was a baby in the crib. Couldn't have been 6 months older, and I saw the hand of God, you know, like it was Michelangelo's hand.
Oh, right.
Coming through to say, you know, George, be careful. I'll never forget it. My mother, George, be careful. My father, George, be careful. My sister, George, be careful. You know,
your
teacher,
George,
your kid, everybody tells me, George, be careful. In the army, they tell you to be careful. My coach is telling me to be careful. Then when you get into designing and advertising, that's when you really hear George, be careful. You know, whoa.
Oh.
I mean, that's like, you can't do anything that interesting, that edgy, et cetera, et cetera. So it was an anti-slogan. I was saying, George, be careful, bullshit, you know what I mean? So I said, why don't you read that book? Because basically, it really is a history of the 60s. Yeah, from my point of view, you know,
right.
But my point of view got to be goddamn good. Cause, I mean, I triggered it, right? So he said, why don't you get that and read it, and I'll see you. And I hung up. I get a call back 3 days later. He said, Jesus, wow. Every couple of pages, there's an episode in there.
Right.
Wow, we could have done a thing. And he starts telling me about the time I couldn't sell something, so I went out out the window
Street
holding
corner,
the
yeah.
thing. He's telling me all the stories. Wow.
That'd we be could, a good episode.
I swear to God, the producers who are doing this silly ass, you know, show about, you know, green,
I'm not
everybody,
suits,
everybody loves it,
martinis,
everybody loves it,
yeah,
and it's nothing wrong with
I
it,
have to
but it's got nothing, but it's got nothing to do with what the hell the 60s were about.
Well, they're still using George
no,
Lewis.
Those agencies existed then as they exist today,
right?
The same bullshit's going on, but maybe they feign that they're not racist, and maybe they feign that they work with a woman, and maybe they feign that they do good work, but they're all full of shit. But the point is, what I'm telling you is there's 7 or 8 agencies that changed the advertising world then.
Right.
You know, and people look back at that period and say, wow, what happened to it?
Yeah.
You know, what happened to it? Because it still was terrific in the 70s, and 80s, and after that
well,
you know.
I have to tell you, they're still looking at the George Lois story, because you don't watch the show. I watched the final episode last night. It ends at Christmas with 4 of the principals leaving the agency.
Oh, really?
And starting a new agency on New Year's Day.
You know, maybe the son of a bitch, I swear to God.
That's not, you just told me that story like 3 minutes ago.
That's amazing.
And I saw it last night.
You know what? Because, I mean, who could have timed it the way I did it? I mean, finding out I'm going to do it, deciding I'm going to do it, Christmas party, the guy said, yeah, these guys are great. Then said, holy shit, right. What do we do now?
You tell them
anyway, you know.
So you wrote the show without even knowing.
And then January the 1st or 2nd, or I don't forget that. Uh-huh. That's pretty funny.
You're telling me that, and I'm thinking, I saw this last night.
That's pretty funny. Hey.
You
I'm a star.
All over again.
I'm a legend.
Everybody
in my own
loves.
Mind. Right.
They all, and somehow everybody's intrigued with it. And
well, saying, you know, it would be pretty terrific if they turned the tables all of a sudden. They got these four guys doing this incredible stuff and picking up the stories where I sell a matzah ad by going out on a ledge and saying to the guy who say, no, I don't like it. I said, well, you make the matzahs, I'll make the ads. The old guy almost had a heart attack. They're giving him pills. I go back into the room. He said, and I'm leaving. I said, thank you very much for proving my work. This is after you had turned it down. And I'm walking out and he said, young man, if you ever quit advertising, I'll give you a job as a matzah salesman. Right? Yeah. But I mean, they could do shows on that
stuff. They're
going
to have to turn it around because they could do shows.
I got a million stories that where people say, that didn't happen. I said, yes, it did.
Now, why? It seems like it was not a respected profession back then. Why did it, everybody, it's sleazy.
No, time out. Okay. I mean, that proves how insidious a show like Mad Men can be in changing history.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everybody looking at that said, boy, I mean, in fact, they've in the Times articles, the Times editorial pages, boy, back then in the 60s, that was tough. Boy,
well, they looked like they were monsters.
Women were treated like shit.
Well, yeah.
This and that and this and that. Yeah, I mean, it goes on and on. That's what's so insidious about a show like that. Yeah. I got nothing against the show because
if it's not accurate.
I mean, I sound like a mafia guy making fun of the Soprano show, if you know what I mean. But probably some mafia guys looked at Soprano show and said, "What
that ain't even
bullshit?
Close. Not
what?
Even close.
But they don't know from the mafia. We don't know from the mafia."
And I go home and I drink out of the milk carton, and my wife doesn't yell at me.
Yeah, exactly. So I think of myself as a mafia guy.
Yeah,
or Joe DiMaggio saying that all the ball players today don't know how to play ball. Which they do. They don't know how to slide.
Yeah, no.
Nobody. Jesus Christ. You're going into a bag and a tag is on this side. You hook slide this way and you put your toe in.
Your lead foot's not even on.
You right? Right? You go, if you're stealing second and bag and tag's over you, they all go in straight.
There it is. Baseball lessons from George.
What the fuck? I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, do they have sliding pits in spring training? Did I teach them anything?
Bronx boy, you're a Yankee fan?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the only only turmoil in my mind was when Robinson in 49, when Brooklyn got Robinson, I became a big Dodger fan. I was a Yankee fan, always a Yankee fan. And so when the Yankees played the Dodgers, I was torn because I knew the Yankees were racist at the time. You know, they wouldn't grab a ball player. They were one of the last teams to take a black ball player.
Wow.
Until finally they got some really good ones, you know, they got the Elston Howard. But anyway, so I was torn then, but I know I'm a Yankee fan. I mean, I spent, when I went to high school in music and art, I was smart enough when I got my first report card to sign my mother's name, sign my mother's name, Vasiliki. Lois, so that I always signed my report cards for 4 years not because I didn't get great marks, but because baseball season when the Yankees were in town, I always took a day. I always played hooky at least a day, one day that week. I went up to the stadium like 10:15 in the morning. I could get in. I go into the bleachers. I knew how to get from the bleachers into the right field because there was nobody around. And I'd hang in the right field stands on the lower level, and I'd collect baseballs, and I'd go home with a bag of 10 of them, 12 of them, and sell them for a quarter apiece. You know, that was a lot of money back then.
Sure, yeah.
And the ball players got to know me and say, hey, Georgie, they told me, he said, here, take a new one. It's all to me. You know what I mean?
That's great.
No, so I lived in the Yankee Stadium, and I became great pals with Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, a Yogi, etc.
That's it for part 4 of The Buzz Bubble with George Lois. Tune in next week for part 5 on The Buzz Bubble.